Thanks, Ben, Matt, and Lindsay. I just want to sit in that lyric for a while. That's really meaningful. We have a special guest with us this Sunday, Father's Day Eve. And he's a familiar voice to many of you, and as well face. Many of you will see him as a sports anchor on WCCO TV or hear his voice on WCCO Radio with Sports Tonight or Life to the Max or the sports show Sunday night. Mike Max is our special guest this evening. And well known in the area, but he's here because I think of a divine prompting I received about a year ago when I was laying out the teaching calendar for this year and came to this spring series, early summer series. I wanted to teach on the three men of 3 John, Gaius, Diotrephes, and Demetrius, which I began that study a couple of weeks ago. And there's one more person to take a look at, which we'll conclude next Sunday evening. And I want you to know, as I was laying out the calendar, that Father's Day landed right in the middle of that series. And I thought, how do I want to handle that? And if you've been here the last 2 weeks, the theme of 3 John that I'm giving words to is that character always leads. And I wanted to invite a guest, and I was thinking about people whom to invite, and Mike Max had become a recent acquaintance of mine and has a reputation of character that always leads, a reputation of civility in terms of how he intersects with all people, showing respect and dignity to them no matter what their status in life is, a reputation of generosity that is marked in multiple arenas of service in the community and beyond, and a reputation of work, a work ethic that is just extraordinary and maybe unmatched. I don't know, but definitely God's given you high capacity, Mike, and we're grateful for that. And so I gave a call and asked if he would consider coming, and he said yes. And so what a delight that we get to look at Gaius, Demetrius, Diotrephes, and Maxie. Would you give a nice, warm Westwood welcome to Mike Max? Thanks, Mike, for being here. Great day, my friend.
A man should have the decency to be dead if he's going to get an introduction like that. He forgot one important part, and I appreciate the kind words, but he forgot one more label that's accurate and apropos. Because he probably didn't feel comfortable saying it. But he should have added to that, hypocrite. Because as I stand before you today, this is the easy part of life. Standing up here, and I can quote chapter and verse if you want. I can tell you how to lead your life. I can tell you all the good things that you got to do and what you got to do, how you got to perform and how you got to lead your life. I can do that from up here. It's easy. It's living it that's hard. Talking about it is easy. You know, I think about those long days when I come home and I walk through the door and I snap at my wife. That I would never want you to see. Now, of course, I work with Sid Hartman a lot of days, so it's... I think about the sides of me that I wouldn't want anybody else and the thoughts that I have that I wouldn't want anybody else to know about. This is the easy part. And I say that because I don't want to go through life having anybody ever say he's a phony. That he talks the talk and he doesn't walk the walk. The truth is I can talk the talk and I try to walk the walk. And sometimes I succeed and sometimes I fail miserably. But I don't want to pretend that I'm ever something that I'm not. My great uncle Ed, 89 years old. And he's in the hospital and he's on his deathbed and he knows it. He knows he's not going to leave the hospital alive. And sitting next to him at his bedside is my great aunt Edna. And my great uncle Ed says, can you believe it? We were born on the same day, next door neighbors. We grew up, we were playmates, and who'd have thought it? We got to high school and a romance blossomed. And we probably shouldn't have done it, but we got married right out of high school and I didn't know what I was doing and your dad gave us the farm to run. And I wasn't ready for that challenge. And 3 years later, the bank came and took half the farm. So I never told you this, Edna, but there were a lot of days when I didn't know if you'd be there for me at the end of the day. And then 3 years later, the Great Depression came and they took the other half of the farm. He says, I've never told you this, Edna, but you don't know how many days I came home and I thought, will she be there for me? And there you were, telling me to keep the faith that it would get better. And then I wasn't educated, I wasn't trained in anything, and I had 12 different jobs in the next 12 years, and somehow I got 12 bad bosses, and I got fired so many times. How many times did I have to come home and give you that bad news? And you just say the same thing, it's okay, it'll get better tomorrow. When I wasn't around, you raised the kids. I was out with the boys far too often, got home in the middle of the night way too many times. Had that bout with alcoholism, and even most recently, when the casinos came to town, you never even saw the Social Security check. Because I'd take it right from the post office to the bank, and then I'd come to the casino, and then I'd come home and have to explain to you why we didn't have any money again. And you'd say, that's okay. It'll be better tomorrow. Now here I am, 89 years old. I'm not going to leave the hospital alive. I know that, you know that, and I've been reflecting on my life a lot the last week, Edna, and it hasn't been what I hoped it would be. It's been far more misery and pain and frustration than I ever hoped or wanted or could foresee. And there have been far too many difficult days and far too many days that I've lost than I've won. And the disappointments have been major and they've been vast and they've been constant. Here I am, 89 years old. And I look by my bedside. And there you are. You have been with me for this entire incredible, frustrating, disappointing journey, Edna. And you've never wavered. You've stayed right by my side for 89 years. He said, Edna, I've had a lot of time to think about this. And I think you might be bad luck. Sometimes the ingratitude that we have and sometimes not being able to see yourself for who you are. I don't want to go through life like that. I don't believe a lot in luck. I believe that most of us create our way in life. But I do believe that luck is good fortune that comes your way that you have no control over. It just shows up. And you had nothing to do with it. I grew up down the road about 40 miles from Gaylord, Minnesota. To two great parents. I was lucky. I was lucky. My mom and dad, they grew up in Morris, Minnesota, in western Minnesota. They were high school sweethearts. My dad was the driven jock and the captain of all the teams. My mom was the homecoming queen. I'll quit talking or you'll dislike them pretty soon. And they got married after they're out of college. And last summer, our family got together in Montana to celebrate their 50-year anniversary. Why did they make it 50 years? Plus, because their relationship is built on faith. And it's never easy. But it's worth it. And as my mom has always said, you love your kids by loving your spouse. And I try to apply that every day. But I was thinking about Father's Day, and I was thinking about growing up in that home. And I remember I was in the eighth grade, and in the worst way, I decided I wanted a stereo. I needed a stereo. My friends had stereos. And my mom didn't think that would be a good idea because she thought it might distract me and be too noisy. So I didn't think I was going to get it. And then on my birthday, my dad showed up with the stereo. And we put that thing on my dresser and had the turntable, records. Kids, we used to have these things called records. And you'd put it on and it would play music. You had to watch this thing go around. It was really cool. I thought that's the greatest gift I've ever gotten in my life. When I was a junior in high school, I decided I obsessed in the worst way because my brother had moved on to college. My older brother was at Gustavus now, and I had his room downstairs all to myself, this big room. And I decided in the worst way that I needed a waterbed. Remember those? My mom didn't think that was a great idea. And Christmas came. And my dad showed up with the waterbed. And I thought that was the greatest gift in the world. Until we tried to assemble it. And I thought that was the greatest gift I had ever been given. And then I got older. And I realized what my father and my mother had really done for me. The greatest gift that they ever gave me was that they brought me to church on Sundays. And they brought me to church when I was a young kid and I didn't want to go. And they kept bringing me. And they went to Bible school in the summer. And eventually, that person that was up here talking started to make some sense to me. And eventually, I grew more curious about what he had to say. The greatest gift that I ever got in my life from my parents was my Christian faith. And I mean, it ain't easy some days, is it? Hebrews 11, 1. What is faith? It is the confident assurance that something we want is going to happen. It is the certainty that what we hope for is waiting for us even though we cannot see it. And I mean to tell you, this life will test it. A few years ago, I called my dad. I was having a problem. I don't even remember what the problem was. And I was on the phone with him. I'll bet he doesn't even remember this. And I was feeling sorry for myself because I can be good at that. And I was telling him all about my problem. And finally, he says to me, he says, well, you're a Christian, right? And I said, yeah, you know that, Dad. And he says, you got a Christian faith then, right? And I said, you know, Dad, I have a faith. And he says, well, why? What's the point of having a faith if you're never going to use it? What's the point of having a faith if you can't believe that things are going to get better? We have two children, my wife and I. Cassidy is 9. Colton is 5. I'm sorry. Colton's here tonight. Colton is 5 and a half. He said to me a few weeks ago, he said, Dad, is it tomorrow today? And I said, what? He said, is it tomorrow today? I said, well, I've never been asked, is it tomorrow today? I said, what do you mean, is it tomorrow today? He said, well, you said tomorrow we get to get a toy at the store. Is it tomorrow today? My daughter Cassidy, she'll never have to get me a gift again because a few weeks ago at school, they asked all the kids to draw pictures, whatever their favorite picture would be, whatever they wanted to do in their life. And she drew a picture of her and her dad kayaking together. And all you dads know what that means. But this life, it's no picnic sometimes. And I grew up in this small town, Gaylord, Minnesota. I was going into my senior year in high school. And my older brother and I, we painted barns in the summer. And we came home for lunch one day. And there were a couple plates on the table and half the food was there and the other half was gone. And nobody was home. Not only were my parents not there, they didn't even clean up after themselves or finish their lunch. And I went up to the school because I was going to lift weights for the upcoming football season. And the coach greeted me when I came through the door, and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "What do you mean, what am I doing here? We lift weights every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday." He said, "You didn't hear, did you?" And I said, "What?" He said, "Just get up to the hospital. Your younger brother's been in a serious accident." So I drove up to the hospital, Gaylord. And there it was, my mom and dad's car and the ambulance, side by side. And I walked in the hospital door, and I didn't know what was, this was before cell phones and all that. And I walked in, and there's my mom and dad, and they're with the doctor and the ambulance driver. And they explained to me that my younger brother, 12 years old, he was out that day spraying weeds in a bean field, and he was coming back on the tractor. He was riding on the front beam of a tractor, and he fell off, and the first two wheels went over his chest, and then they slammed on the brakes, and he got pinned under the back tire, face down, before it came to a stop. And now he's in the hospital in Gaylord, and they're getting ready to transport him to Methodist Hospital in St. Louis Park. And my mom was a school nurse. And she was lobbying with the doctor that she could ride in the ambulance too. And finally the doctor said, "I don't know that you get this. I know you're the nurse, but you're also his mom, and we don't know if he's going to make it to Methodist Hospital. And I don't think any mother should go through that. And I'll get back to him a little bit later." So what is it that your faith allows you to do? Why is it important? Why is it important to have a faith? A few years ago, I sat down and I interviewed this guy. He's a really good basketball player. And I asked him this question. I said, "Would you have been successful in life had it not been for basketball? Would your life have amounted to anything?" This is the translation. "Had you not been born with long arms and long legs and all these gifts that we all want, right?" And he looked up at me almost offended, and he pierced me with his eyes, and he says, "You don't know me. You don't understand me." He said, "When I was a kid, before I ever knew I was going to be a basketball player, my parents instilled in me this. They said, 'We don't know what you're going to do with your life. We don't care what you're going to do with your life. But here's what we care about. That you take care of two things. Your attitude and your effort. Your attitude and your effort. And here's the good news. You get complete control over both. No one else can do that for you." And he said, "I applied those to basketball and I had gifts." He said, "There's a whole bunch of people that had as many gifts as I did, and it never got off the playground in the neighborhood that I grew up in. But it wasn't because I was athletically gifted. It was because I focused on my attitude and my effort. And had it not been for basketball, I would have been successful in something else, because my parents had instilled in me to focus on your attitude and your effort." Now, his name is Michael Jordan. And he might be the greatest basketball player ever in the world. And what he was telling me that day was, you have so much more control than you think. And what your faith does, it allows you to focus on your attitude and your effort and leave everything else to him. So you say, why doesn't everybody have a great attitude? Why doesn't everybody give great effort then? Because it's really hard. It's really hard to wake up every day with a great attitude. It's really hard to believe that just doing the best you can, and then you can just turn it over to him. Because we want it on our terms. And we want him to bless whatever it is we've got. So, you know, you want to make God laugh, just tell him what the plan is. We want it our way, don't we? And we want to help him along the way. Hebrews 12. What are those things that wrap themselves so tightly around you and slow you down and hold you back? Let us run with patience the race that God has set before us with our eyes on Jesus. I've learned one thing in this life. I was sitting around with some of my high school buddies a few years ago. One's a minister. And we were talking. And we came to this one, only this one conclusion about life that we could figure as we've entered into our 40s. Everybody is kind of screwed up. Everybody has some baggage in their life. Everybody has something that wraps itself around you and keeps you from being whatever it is you want to be. And we can be aware of it and still self-destruct. I talked to you today about faith. I don't come up here and talk to you about forgiveness. Because if I'm really honest, I'd tell you that I have a tough time with that. I want to be forgiven. Don't get me wrong. I just have a tough time forgiving sometimes. Lord, I will forgive that person. Just let me get even first. And I fight that every day, and I've tried hard to overcome it. And then there's those people in your life, those people that bring you down. It might be a coworker, it might be your boss, it might be your neighbor, it might be the person you thought was your friend. Those people that bring you down. And pretty soon you tend to obsess about them and you forget about all the great things you got going on in your world. How many times have I allowed myself into that trap? And forgotten how blessed I am. I wake up with this great wife of 14 years. And my two children. And every day they ask me the same question. Do you get to stay all day today, Daddy? And then when I tell them I can't, well, what time will you be home? Can we play when you get home? And I forget how blessed I am because I'm so obsessed about those things that have wrapped themselves around me and made me feel sorry for myself. And I've forgotten what my mom and dad taught me about faith. I was struggling about a month ago because there's this good friend of mine and he got himself in a lot of trouble. And it's really hard for me because I don't want to condone it and I don't want to condemn him. And it was about that time that I met with Pastor Joel to talk about the semantics and the format of this. And we got through that and we covered all that. And I said, okay, now I get a freebie. You know, it's like you're at the doctor's office, right? And he fixes your knee and you say, you know, doc, as long as I'm here, my shoulder's been bothering me too. And I laid this on him and I told him what the circumstances were and I explained to him that this person who I really do enjoy as a friend. I said, you know, I let my mailbox go full on my cell phone so that he can't reach me and that I'm not responsible to call him back and I avoid places that he might be because I don't know how to handle this situation. And he said to me, in essence, it's okay to hate the sin and love the sinner. And he said, you can't keep going on this way. You can't keep your mailbox full and keep avoiding this person. What kind of life is that? He says, you got to call him. It took me about a week. And finally I did. And I explained to him. And then we just talked about things, nothing in particular. And I felt so much better when I got off the phone. And the next day, unbeknownst to me, he went and he had lunch with a mutual friend of ours. And that mutual friend called me a couple days later and he says, you won't believe what that phone call meant to him. Because he's a little bit short on friends right now. And he said, this is a man with great pride and little emotion. And he said, for the first time I saw him show some genuine humility and emotion. And I was so inspired by that, that there's another friend that I have that's in another pickle. Don't get me wrong, not all these people are bad people. And I called him for the same reason, and I could just hear the pain in his voice, you know? I could just hear it, and all I wanted to do was let him know that I'm there. Because Pastor Joel had given me that great advice. That was really hard to do, but what I did was I took fear and replaced it with faith. And it's funny how things work out then. What my faith allows me to do is to work hard seeing results. And know that I will be rewarded at some point in time. My dad, he always told us. He had two things that he said a lot. One was, son, money doesn't grow on trees. And the other one was, hard work always pays off. And a lot of times when you're working hard, you don't see the fruits of your labor. A lot of times you got to keep churning and not know, but still believing that it's the right thing to do. We do this show, Life to the Max, on Channel 4. 11 o'clock on Saturday nights, runs. If that's too late for some of you, you can TiVo it. But we do this show, and it's about all kinds of things. It's not just about sports, but all kinds of things. I do it with this company, Life Touch, and they're involved in a number of different things. And one of the things that they do is they build schools down in Haiti, and they try to nourish kids down there. They built like 12 schools, and they try to nourish them by providing food for them. And so they go down there often, and they said, let's do a piece down in Haiti on the orphanages down there, because they have a tough time down there with these orphan kids, and it's rampant. And let's do a story on this and what's happening down there and how they're trying to make a difference, and these people are doing everything they can for these kids, and it's not always working out that well. And so we did this story on it, and it wasn't my idea, it was their idea, but it ran on Life to the Max, the show, and we did this story about the orphanages in Haiti. And it was a good piece. A year later, I'm at Wooddale Church. And a gentleman comes up to me and he introduces himself to me. And he says, do you have just a minute? And I said, sure. He says, I don't want to bother you, but I want to introduce you to my family. I said, sure. And I walked over, and there was his wife and his two children that they had adopted from the orphanage in Haiti. He said, I want you to meet my two daughters, because we were sitting and watching your program that night. And my wife and I looked at each other and just said, we've got to do this. And I want you to meet these two beautiful daughters with their big smiles and their new opportunity. I was lucky that I happened to run into him that day. But what your faith does is it allows you to go out and do stories that you think are made of the right stuff, and hopefully make an impact on somebody. What your faith does is it allows you to work hard. I think it's really cool when sons are proud of their dads. I was driving out here this morning, and I stopped by Ivan's. And some of you probably know where that is, on Highway 5 and 101 there, a little gas station. And it's not far from my house. I don't live that far from here. And I pulled up in there, and there were three boys on bikes. They must have been 11, 12 years old. And I got out of my car, I was going in to get some coffee, and I heard the one boy say to the other two boys, he says, my dad is the most amazing person in the world. And I stopped and I listened. And he says, he took us out to the archery range yesterday. Bow and arrow. 40 yards away. Drew it back. Let it fly. 6 inches before it was going to hit the bullseye, he caught it in his left hand. The second kid says, that's nothing. My dad took us out to the rifle range. 30-odd six. 60 yards away. No scope. Boom. Shoots it. 6 inches before it was going to hit the bullseye, he caught it in his teeth. Third kid says, that's nothing. My dad works for the state highway department. And every day he gets off work at 5 o'clock and he's home by 4:15. I didn't clear that one with Joel. There are no, we don't have construction workers. If we do, I love you, man. See that faith that allows people to work hard and not know what the results are going to be. And to keep going and to keep going when you don't know. Because you believe in something bigger than yourself. So my younger brother, they take him in the ambulance, and my mom does ride along. And my older brother and I in a Bible rode in the car as best we could behind. And this was before cell phones and text messaging and all that. So we didn't know what we were going to find when we got to the hospital. And I can remember it like it was yesterday. And we pulled up into that hospital, into that parking lot. It was a beautiful day. And I remember how nervous I got as we pulled into that parking lot. You know, I was okay for a while because we could converse the whole time. And then finally you get to the hospital and you go. And we walked up the two flights of stairs to the emergency room. And he was still alive. And they were working on him. And he was screaming out in pain. He's 12 years old. They wouldn't even let you see him. And all you can do is sit in the other room and pray. And I remember the first time I got to see him, I didn't even recognize him. 12 years old. He's going to do all things that I didn't do. I remember the doctor said, if you can make it through this first night, we think you got a chance. And a great thing happened. He woke up the next day. And the doctor said to him, I don't know what God has planned for you, but it must be something special because I don't know why you're still alive, but you are. And he made it through the next day and the next day, and it was tough. And I didn't even realize how tough it was because I was in high school. Now I'm a parent. Now I get it. My mom and dad were going back and forth and they were juggling me and my older brother, and my dad was working and my mom was working and their son was in the hospital. I didn't have a clue what they really went through. But he got off the critical list and into the serious, and he kept moving and he was progressing and it was hard. And eventually into his 7th grade year there, he got to come home. And they said he'll heal faster at home and he can stay overnight at the hospital there in Gaylord. And he did. And he went to the hospital and then he got reinfected. And he ended up back in a wheelchair and back in the cities and back in the hospital. And here we go again. And eventually he got good again. And eventually they released him again. And eventually he got to go to school with his friends again. And eventually he could walk and eventually he could run. And when he graduated from high school, he was number 2 in his graduating class. And he was academic all-state in football and basketball and baseball. He was the quarterback for the all-star football team in the all-state game. And he was the captain of that team. And he went to college. And he played football and basketball and baseball. And he had a 3.8 GPA or something that I'm not familiar with. And now he lives in Hutchinson, Minnesota. With a wife and 2 children. And he's done far more since he was out of school than he ever did in school. And he called me a few years ago. And he was down. And he doesn't get down very often. And he explained to me that he taught Sunday school in that church in Hutchinson. And that there was a little girl in his class. She was the spark plug. She was the light. And she was out with her family that weekend and she had fallen out of the back of a pickup and hit her head and died. And he was struggling with it. Because he said to me, why did I get to live when I had my accident? Why did I get to live? And I said, Mark, I don't know the answers to all those questions, and I got a lot of questions. But I said, I do know what you've done with your life is pretty special. And I do know that you have a faith that you believe in that tells you that you don't understand everything and you never will understand everything, but you still believe that there's going to be a good tomorrow. And you still believe somehow that the best is yet to come. And you still believe, no matter how tough the situation is, that you're going to get through it. Because you have a faith. Because you have a faith. I got a lot of great gifts from my parents over the years. A lot of great gifts. But they really did teach me that tough times don't last and tough people do. And tough people only last because they have a great faith. And that is the greatest Father's Day gift I've ever received in my life. Thank you very much for having me out here tonight.